So first I'm just going to give you a brief snapshot of the current U.S. terrorism financing laws. And second, I'll go into my research interviewing American Muslims who are, because of these laws and policies, experiencing a chilling effect on their donations, which they wish to make to humanitarian relief organizations and American charities providing humanitarian relief. First, with respect to the terrorism financing laws, I encourage you to read the report if you're looking for more detail, because it's quite complex. But there are two major regimes under which that are covered by the terrorism financing laws. First, the criminal material support statute, which criminalizes material support for terrorism or to a terrorist organization. And second, a scheme under which the federal government can designate organizations as terrorist organizations and shut them down under a blocking order, so an administrative action by the Treasury Department. And in those cases, often there are no allegations of criminal wrongdoing, and criminal cases are not brought. This is an administrative action, not a criminal action. Both of these regimes raise different issues, but what they share in common is they both contain serious due process failures and also impose guilt by association. So first I'm going to talk a bit about the designation scheme, and then I'll speak about the criminal material support statute. The designation scheme is encoded in the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, IEEPA, and an executive order signed by President Bush, Executive Order 13-224. And together, these provide the Department of Treasury with wide discretion to designate American organizations and international organizations as individuals as terrorist organizations. The consequences of designation are severe civil penalties and criminal penalties, and under a blocking order, the federal government may seize the assets of these organizations and forbid any doing business with those individuals or organizations. And under these, the scheme lacks even very basic due process protections for organizations that may be designated. So under this scheme, the Treasury Department has virtually unchecked power to designate groups. The government may shut down the organization on the basis of secret evidence with no notice to the organization, do not require the federal government to provide a list of statement of reasons for the designation or even to give the organization opportunity to defend itself. The law does not identify the burden of proof that the Treasury Department carries and is very unclear about any deadlines about providing notice to organizations. And under this law, Treasury has wide discretion, and after the designation, there's very very limited judicial review for organizations that may be designated and shut down. There's a very deferential after-the-fact judicial review because it's an administrative agency action. And in fact, the 9/11 Commission, when examining terrorism financing laws, stated and found that these laws raise serious civil liberties concerns. In addition, under an expansion of the law in the encoded in the Patriot Act, the federal government, the Treasury Department, can seize the assets of organizations merely by asserting that the organization is under investigation. So this is pending designation, and it effectively shuts down the organization. And under this, again, there's no notice, opportunity to respond, meaningful ability to defend in court, etc. And under this, it really requires merely the signature of a mid-level Treasury official and imposes essentially most of the consequences of designation. In the case of one American Muslim charity, Kind Hearts, over 3 years ago, the federal government issued a blocking order, seized its assets, effectively putting it out of business. Now, over 3 years later, the charity has not had an opportunity to defend itself, has not seen the evidence against it, and has never been designated nor had criminal charges brought against it, but it remains out of business. The ACLU is representing that charity and in a challenge to that blocking order and awaits a judicial decision on that. But the law still permits the government to seize assets pending designation. There's very little oversight for these actions, and the limited review that has taken place raises serious causes for concern that the evidence the Treasury Department has used to designate organizations contain very serious flaws. For instance, the 9/11 Commission looked at the designation of two American Muslim charities and found that it was based on rank hearsay, evidence that would be inadmissible in court, and nearly and primarily news articles. In some cases, one charity, a federal court found that the news articles in some cases didn't even mention the charity in question. But because the charity did not have the opportunity to see the evidence against it or to rebut it in court, the agency's decision to designate remained exact. And moving on to the criminal material support statute, that's encoded in the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, AEDPA. It contains criminal provisions in section 2339A and B, and it's been amended by the Patriot Act and by the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act, IRPA. And if you want more detail about that, again, look at the report. But the statute raises two serious issues. First, it's very vague. It effectively criminalizes guilt by association. It doesn't provide guidance about what is and is not prohibited in terms of material support for terrorism. And it's also very overbroad. It defines material support for terrorism very broadly and imposes punishment without regard for the intent or the character of the support that's provided. So the statute currently does not require the government to prove that when providing material support intended to further the terrorist aims of an organization or to further terrorism. So therefore, the law can be used to punish wholly innocent assistance and humanitarian relief. So for instance, for American donors, the statute could be used to prosecute them for innocent assistance given to, say, a charity that's later designated as a terrorist organization, though they only intended to support humanitarian relief or to perform a religious obligation, fulfill a religious obligation. And the government merely has to show some form of knowledge about the organization in order to impose criminal penalties. And the government's actually argued that those who provide support can run afoul of the law even if they intend oppose unlawful activities of an organization, intend their support only to be used for humanitarian purposes, and take precautions to ensure that their support is only used for those humanitarian purposes. Also, this statute contains no general exemption for humanitarian assistance. So the only exemptions are strict and for medicine and religious materials. So under the statute, one can provide medicine but cannot provide clean drinking water with which to take the medicine. And so a number of benign activities normally considered humanitarian aid could be labeled material support under the statute, such as provision of food aid, latrines, blankets, clothing, tents to non-combatant civilians, also teaching English to nurses, public health experts, advice on creating clean water supplies, or medical training. And the Patriot Act expanded the statute to include training, expert advice, and assistance. And there's great confusion about what will be considered material support for terrorism and therefore criminalized and what may not. So especially for American donors who wish to support humanitarian assistance, there's a great deal of confusion about whether providing donations to a charity or humanitarian relief organization could expose them to criminal liability. And I'll get into that further in a moment. But I now want to shift to discuss the ACLU report. I conducted the research for the reports based on 120 interviews with American Muslim donors and Muslim community leaders, leaders of American U.S.-based Muslim charities, religious scholars and religious leaders, as well as former Treasury Department officials and terrorism financing and Islamic banking finance experts. And the basis of the research, the purpose was to identify what effect, if any, there is of these laws and policies on American Muslims who wish to make donations to humanitarian relief organizations and American charities in fulfillment of their religious obligation to give charity, which is called zakat and is a religious obligation for all observant Muslims. And what I found was that there's a tremendous fear among American Muslims about giving and charity, and that the U.S. terrorism financing laws and policies are creating a very clear and widespread chilling effect on American Muslims who wish to donate. Muslims of many different ethnic backgrounds, both immigrant and U.S. born, told me that they feel that they cannot fulfill their sacred duty to give zakat. Many said that they feared if they considered giving a donation that they could be arrested for their donation, prosecuted criminally, subpoenaed to appear in a criminal prosecution as a witness, or a grand jury, targeted for law enforcement interviews by the FBI about their donations to lawfully operating charities. Deported or denied citizenship or a green card because of their donations, or otherwise targeted or implicated because of donations given to charities, and I want to be clear, charities that are registered with the IRS and are currently operating. And there's among donors, I found that there's a belief that it's unsafe for them, or they're unable to donate, especially to Muslim charities or to organizations providing humanitarian relief in Muslim countries or countries experiencing conflict or countries where designated terrorist organizations may be operating in controlled territory or otherwise operating. And many donors told me specifically that because of this, they felt that they were not fulfilling a religious obligation and it was affecting their religious standing. Like all major religions, Islam requires tithing, and for many Muslims, American Muslims, they're unable to fulfill that obligation. One specific piece, the many donors told me that specifically they felt that they were unable to give donations for overseas relief efforts. Across the board, we found a chilling effect, but most very specifically on overseas efforts, overseas aid. And for many Muslims told me that they viewed their obligation to give zakat as one to give to the neediest in the world, which they interpreted to be those overseas, those living in refugee camps, those from their countries of origin, because they interpret their religious obligation to give to those closest to them or with some relation to them, meaning those in their home country. And many told me that they feared running afoul of the law if they gave specifically for overseas effort. They felt that especially U.S.-based charities providing overseas effort would be targeted for future enforcement. And for many donors, this certainly interferes with their ability to practice their faith in accordance with their personal religious beliefs. For instance, I talked with a Chinese Muslim who said after the earthquake in Sichuan province, he wanted to send aid or to donate to a charity that was providing aid, but he was too scared to do so because he thought he could be denied his pending citizenship application or get an FBI knock at the door about his donation to that province. I also talked with Pakistanis who felt that they couldn't donate after the earthquake in Pakistan. Many Palestinians similarly told me that they thought it was completely not an option for them to donate to Palestinians, whether in the occupied territories or elsewhere, or donate to southern Lebanon, for instance, for relief efforts. What I also found was, in speaking with people, that in terms of the cause of this climate interference, because the laws are so vague and overbroad, there's much confusion about the criminal law and whether donations can be ultimately subject to prosecution. And for many donors and community leaders, they told me that in meetings with the Treasury Department and law enforcement officials, they sought clarification about the law, and the officials have refused to clarify whether they could be exposed to criminal liability for donations given in good faith to legally operating humanitarian relief or U.S.-based charitable organizations. And donors told me that they've been targeted for interviews by law enforcement because of their donations, and they've seen criminal prosecutions take place. I'm just going to end in one second that another impact of these laws and policies is that they're counterproductive. Donors told me that as a result, they are now giving in cash and giving diminished amounts, but in cash, so that they are not subject to enforcement, which some experts have said could complicate efforts to track terrorism financing. And what we've also seen is that these policies are alienating American Muslims who now distrust law enforcement and should rather be treated as key allies instead in the war on terrorism financing. And I'll end here.